The service manual is an outline, a guide. It is not a policy document. It is a helpful tool to help new people in service, as well as it has the 12 concepts. But there is a good chance that, let's just say there's somebody from all 93 areas in this meeting tonight. There's a good chance that there's 93 different ways of doing certain things. So please remember that when you go to your area assembly or your district meeting or your area committee meeting. And then we get to area committee, and some of you are going to say, well, I don't think we have an area committee. Well, we don't use that term. And I'm going to stress to you that that's because this is a guide. It is an outline. I don't even like to say it's a best practice, more shared experience. But tonight we are on chapter four, the area committee. What I want to ask everyone to do in the new service manual is to turn back for a second to page 18, which is the first page of chapter three, the area assembly. And you might remember that I really love this picture and diagram. I love it because it shows that an area assembly should have the same voting participation as the General Service Conference. At the General Service Conference, GSR, I mean delegates, are over two-thirds of the voting participants, closer to 70% most years. You can see by that diagram at page 18 at the bottom, that's what your area assembly should look like. Area assemblies very much match the General Service Conference in many ways. But I want to point out that picture, as you can see, black is for the GSRs, that symbolizes the GSRs. And then you see the other colors, and you see delegate, alternate delegate, treasurer, registrar, area chair, DCM, committee chair, past delegate. That matches what composition says on page 26 in chapter four, the chapter we're on tonight. The area committee is typically composed of all DCMs, area officers, and chairs of area service committees. That's the non-black participants in the diagram on page 18. Some areas also have an officers' meeting, which is separate than the area committee. So there's lots of things, and like I've stressed, please, whether your area calls it a handbook or guidelines or your structure binder or your current practice binder, whatever your area calls it, become familiar with it. Not overnight, not by tomorrow morning. You don't need to be an expert. But find out how you get a hold of it. Find out how you can access it. Find out how you can get that information. So, underneath the headline of Area Committee, it says the Area Committee is especially focused on the health of the area and thus on growth and harmony in the AA Fellowship. An active Area Committee deals with all kinds of service problems. Is experience being shared among groups? Is the AA message getting to hospitals, prison, jails, and rehabilitation centers? Are news media and professionals who deal with suffering alcoholics well informed about AA? If GSR is a lax, if there is a lack of harmony in a district, if there are difficulties in public information or other service in an area, a member of the area committee usually knows it and can turn to the full committee for help. So it sounds by this description that an area committee is a helpful thing to have. I'm not going to do your homework for you. It's like when someone calls me and says, Billy, how many areas let past delegates have a vote? I think you should do your own homework. I don't need to share that. If you want to know how many areas have an area committee, you could easily start to do some work. Just start with your region. And if you have trouble contacting people in other areas, let me know. It does say in some areas, past delegates serve on the committee with or without a vote. In others, only the outgoing delegate is a committee member with or without a vote. The decision on the status of past delegates in the area is up to the group conscience of the area assembly. That's very important. Now, it's not law. It's not in stone. But it is shared experience. In other words, the area committee shouldn't decide whether past delegates have a vote. The area assembly should. That's something that a policy change that GSRs should have a say in. It goes through the chair and secretary and registrar and treasurer, and it gives their requirements and what their duties are, and it talks about alternate area chairs and then delegates. But I want to talk about a couple of things that are really not stressed in here that are more experience-based, because there's only a couple of pages here for you to read. I want to say where it says on page 26, area officers, qualifications and duties. It says chair. In my humble opinion, it should have a asterisk there that says, this is probably the toughest job in all of Alcoholics Anonymous service, with the least thanks. And that's based on my real life experience as a past area chair. That's based on my experience of knowing lots of area chairs and past area chairs. Is the area chair has a very, very tough job. And everybody has an opinion as to what they think or how that person should do their job. And what's really important to stress here, and I'm not trying to upset any past delegates or delegates that might be in the room tonight, but in our structure and in our concepts and in the qualifications and responsibilities of an area delegate, it is the area chair who is responsible for the area business. It is the area chair who is responsible for chairing the area committee meeting and the area assembly. It is the area chair who is responsible for the health and the well-being of those service committees. It is not the job of the delegate or alternate delegate. I can tell you that I have chaired the area chair roundtable at NARASA 3 times in the last 20 years, and I'm going for a fourth. In 2 weeks, I'm going to chair that roundtable again. It is amazing when you get a bunch of area chairs together and the common issues that they face. And it's not that we don't want area delegates to participate. We want them to participate, but we want them to know that their primary job is to go to the conference and to be the communication link between the General Service Office, General Service Board, AA World Services, and AA Grapevine, and the groups in their area. And the delegate does that by obviously having direct communication with district chairs and DCMs. But it talks about what the chair's responsibilities are, and you can read them, and it talks about the secretary and the registrar. And in some areas, we have two secretaries. We have a recording and we have a corresponding. And then we have a registrar. Some areas still don't have a registrar, but most do. And except for the treasurer, I would tell you that in most area committees, the treasurer's responsibilities are the same. They don't vary too much. But when you look at secretary and registrar and corresponding secretary and recording secretary and alternate registrar and alternate recording secretary and alternate, these jobs differ greatly from area to area. And I would tell you that your area probably has some, again, the name will be different, but they have some document describing what those responsibilities are for the area officers in your area. So, what really is this thing called an area committee? I think that's the thing I would rather spend time on. Even though we haven't gotten there yet, we'll get there in a couple of weeks. Most of you know that the General Service Board has 21 trustees. 21. Seven are non-alcoholic, 14 are alcoholic. And out of those 14 alcoholic, we have eight regionals, two at large, and four general service. But the General Service Board is 21 people. And it only meets really four times a year, but really three. It has real meetings in October, July, and January. It has a meeting at the end of the General Service Conference, but that's really just to elect the new trustees legally. And we'll get to that later on, what I mean by legally. And it deals with putting the actions of the conference into the trustees' minutes. But we have a $15 million operation at AA World Services. We have a better than $50 million pension fund. We have a reserve fund that's currently at like 7.5 months of operating expenses. And we have the AA Grapevine with 60,000 or so subscribers. 21 people can't get together three times a year and effectively watch over the business operations of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as such, we have two corporate boards. We have the AA Grapevine board and the AA World Services board. Each has 10 and 9 directors, respectfully. And I'll share about AAWS. I've been a director and a trustee. AAWS gets together 8 times a year, not three. AAWS gets together more on almost every 8 weeks. Those nine directors work in close contact with each other. And they accomplish what a large, unwieldy board of 21 people who get together only 3 times a year could do, because it requires that much attention. And what it also does is it leaves matters of policy up to the trustees and the various trustee committees. So when I think about an area committee, and I've been to many areas and served in areas that have an area committee, the area committee's purpose is almost just like the AA Grapevine Board or AA World Services Board's purpose. It's to deal with routine and ordinary business that's not policy level about an AA policy, but is more like paying bills, getting a new computer for the area secretary, maybe changing the banks you use, maybe signing contracts for your area convention or your, if your area committee or area assembly meets someplace, signing those contracts. Most area committees, most areas that have an area committee, that's the type of business done at an area committee. And what it does is allow when the GSRs get together, just like when the trustees get together, for them to smoke, focus more on large matters of policy, focus on the agenda items, focus on electing the new area officers every 2 years, focus on now. The areas that have effective area committees, what they do have in common is that they have a clear guideline and boundary described and approved by group conscience about what authority the area committee has and what authority the area assembly has, so that it's clear and not made up on the fly. Now, there's different ways that this happens. There are some areas, as we know, that have weekend assemblies. Some of those weekend assembly areas that have an area committee, there is a period of time over that weekend, a 2 or 3 or 4 hour window, where just the area committee gets together. Now, except for one area that I know of in the Southeast, the only one in the US and Canada that has a closed area committee meeting, anybody can go to the area committee meeting, but the only people who participate and vote are those on the area committee. And a lot of people, obviously, if they're at an assembly, would be there and might want to attend. There are other areas that have day-long assemblies. It's very common for those areas for the area committee to meet on the off months that the area assembly doesn't meet. If the area assembly meets 4 times a year, maybe the area committee meets monthly or bi-monthly. There are lots of different variable options out there that are done by the 93 areas. But I would just stress that the area committee's job is not to take things away from the assembly. It's not to disempower GSRs. It's actually opposite. It's to empower GSRs. And the only way you can have an effective area committee, especially, think about the area committees across the US and Canada that meet not during an assembly. They meet maybe one night a month or every other month or one day every other month. The only way that the GSRs can trust what's going on is if they get clear, prompt, transparent communication that the area committee is reporting to them all the actions it took so that they know. And remember, our triangle is upside down. You as an AA member could read something that the General Service Board did lately or AAWS did lately. And you might have somebody tell you that's none of your business. That's our prerogative. But it is always the party above you in the upside down triangle's business. They shouldn't interfere left, right, and center. But if they think something is important enough, they could always ask for something to be put on the area assembly agenda. That maybe they think the area committee overreached its authority. But really, this is about harmony and unity. And it's also about taking advantage of time and not wasting time. Many decisions made by an area committee would take hours to be made at an area assembly. But you have more experienced servants because you have DCMs and area chairs and area officers. So they have institutional history and they have experience with the issues that are being dealt with. There's a couple of questions. I first want to talk about expenses. Every area committee has expenses. Every area assembly has expenses. It talks about delegate travel. I'm going to talk about everybody else's travel. Economic status should not be ever a barrier for service in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I know we could say if someone doesn't have a car and the assembly is not near public transportation, I get it. There are all kinds of accessibility issues. But in general, we just want to make sure that everybody has their expenses reimbursed who's doing service for Alcoholics Anonymous. And please, I just ask you to remember this, because there's a lot of future AA leaders here. Don't think you're doing AA as a favor by not submitting your receipts. As an area committee member or an area assembly member, don't not submit your receipts. If you have a corrections chair or an area delegate or somebody else who just thinks, I have the money, it's going to be my contribution to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sure we have some past area treasurers or current area treasurers in our room tonight. If you're familiar with the budgeting process in AA, a lot of it has to do with what did we do the year before for the same line item. And if you don't spend that money in your line item, then perhaps the next year they don't put the right amount of money in the budget. Second, what about if someone knows you don't submit receipts? And they think, because they don't know better, that they need to not submit receipts in order to have the position that you had. There's an easy remedy to this issue. Submit your receipts, take your check, deposit it in your account, and then deposit it all in your home group's basket. If you wanted to go back to AA that bad, then do that. But don't just not take receipts, because it is so important. We talk about accessibility on so many levels. We talk about sight issues, hearing issues, language issues, cultural issues, physical impairment issues. But we have to include financial impairment. There should never be a financial wall up from doing service in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the first question on page 31. Must an area assembly have a certain percentage or number of members in attendance in order to conduct business? I'll read you their answer. Generally speaking, each area decides for itself what constitutes a quorum, meaning the minimum number of members that must be present to make the proceedings of that meeting valid. Some areas have a specific number of DCMs to be present. Alternate DCMs are typically counted towards a quorum only when the principals are not present. So that's for the area committee. You have to have enough DCMs present. When a new area committee is elected, who notifies GSO? The outgoing delegate is requested to provide GSO with contact information for all incoming area officers and committee chairs. This information is stored in GSO's database, which is also accessible to the area registrar, and is used to communicate with these officers and committee chairs throughout their rotation. What is the relationship between the area chair and the area delegate? Generally speaking, the area chair runs an assembly and is the administrative leader of the area, focused on the business of the area. The delegate can be described as the area's communication leader and is focused on the general service structure and serving as the link between the area, the conference, and AA as a whole. I've been, you know, blessed enough to have a lot of service sponsees that have become delegates over the years. And I love the way they phrase this there, because that's what I've had to say to many an area delegate who has called me. I've had to ask them, is that an administrative issue? Isn't that really the business of the area chair? And I love the way they wrote that in here. The other thing I want to stress is you might be an area that has an area committee and you think it's a disaster. Well, then welcome to AA service, and you can make a motion, and maybe you just want an assembly. Maybe you're one of those areas that doesn't have an area committee. Well, welcome to area service. And maybe you could ask your area to look back, and maybe you want an area committee. But it's very important that you find out how your area conducts business. Next week, we'll talk about assemblies. I really I can tell you this honestly. I don't know how many service manual studies I've done since 1999 when I was a delegate, but it's a lot. And this is the first one that is both in Spanish and American Sign Language. And that makes me so happy that these recordings will be available. And we're using a professional interpreter. So there'll be a video of that interpreter so we don't have to worry about anonymity issues. And so, even though these two people are professionals and not here as trusted servants, but here working, I do want to thank Martha and Amalia, for being here tonight and, being available to be, to work for Alcoholics Anonymous. We will have one slight, if you have a question, you can send it in the chat if you are English speaking. If you are a deaf member of Alcoholics Anonymous and you have a question, you can let D know. We will somehow try to let the interpreter see your screen, and then we will let the interpreter speak and tell me the question. If you are a Spanish speaker tonight, we will unmute you. But you will have 2 minutes to ask your question, and then Amalia will translate it. But I want to repeat, and I'll ask Amalia to help me out here. This is a sh not a sharing session, but a Q&A. So Amalia, you can be my, you can let me know if it turns into any kind of sharing session. So with that, I am going to go to questions. I do want to mention one thing about area committees that is often overlooked, and that is the legal structure of your area assembly and area committee. Out of the 93 areas, many of those areas have a legal structure besides a spiritual structure, much like the General Service Board has a legal structure and a spiritual structure. And in many of those areas, you are a nonprofit corporation, and usually it's the area officers that are the directors of that corporation. But just like you get to see the AA World Services guidelines, bylaws, and the Grapevine bylaws, and the General Service Board bylaws, which are the legal instruments, not the spiritual, you should be able to see the bylaws of your area. Legal structure, whatever it's called. Most of the time, they have a name that keeps AA out of it. But there is a legal side. And often we forget this. We always have areas that are in trouble because they don't have a meeting of their annual corporate board and they don't have those minutes in a binder. Or we have areas that forget to re-up with their Secretary of State. And they go as an inactive corporation. So I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned that there is as much a legal side to area business as there is a legal side to the General Service Board. And just like the General Service Board, the spiritual outweighs the legal per the concepts. Your area officers might have the legal right to do something, but if you're living via the concepts, well, then your spiritual assembly should be the ultimate authority, just like the General Service Conference is. So, with that, I'm going to go to questions. Please send them in.
And Billy, I just sent you one. If I'm not mistaken, I spoke with Amalia about this earlier. She'll be the only voice she'll get to hear because she'll be able to hear the person that would have a question, and then she'll be the one
Oh,
to tell you.
gotcha. Thank you. They're on the separate channel. Thank you. So here's a question. My question is an area committee similar to a steering committee? No, it definitely is not. An area committee is a steering committee is usually much smaller. Some areas have an officers meeting. Some do not. But the area committee is a distinct entity in AA service, not like a small steering committee. When I think of a steering committee, I think of something that's like 9, 10, 12 members. If you have all the DCMs and all the area officers and all the area chair people, some area committees could be 50 to 100 people. So, next question.
I have one.
I have one here. Would you speak to the use of housekeeping motions to spend money from the area treasury in a hurry? Well, I would speak to any housekeeping issues are not spending money, number one. You would never go to the General Service Conference and during the opening session have somebody make a housekeeping motion to like spend $10,000. It just wouldn't happen. That an area committee should be able to easily deal with the financial issues of the area. What I would suggest as a best practice for every area is a matrix of authority, a simple one, not complicated, that is approved by the area assembly. In other words, who can sign contracts on behalf of the area? Who's allowed to bind the area legally? Can anyone just sign? My experience is it's best that that be in writing. But what about if the area chair runs into a $1,000 issue? There should be something in that matrix as to what authority the area chair has without coming back to the area. A big mistake is made with budgets because some people mistake a budget as approval to spend, when truthfully a budget is not approval to spend. It is just an estimate of what expenses might be spent over the next year. Same with how you reimburse trusted servants to go to certain events. That should be in your matrix. You know, what do we pay for the delegate? What do we pay for the alternate delegate? What do we pay for the area chair? What do we pay for the secretary? What do we pay for the corrections chair? Do they get to go to SASA? Do they get to go to the regional forum? Do they get to, you know, whenever AA's money, but to vote on this stuff all the time would just be insanity. You know, Bill said in Concept Check 6, we chose the corporate model. We chose the corporate model. So, but housekeeping is not a place. It was mentioned the importance of receipts for budgeting purposes and so service is possible for all members. What about those that abuse their budget and turn in receipts for every cup of coffee and every snack? What is a reasonable balance for what is a covered expense? I love that question. It's why I just said a budget is not a mandate to spend. That should be a separate matrix document, a separate authority document that says, you have the authority to spend this money at this time. Some areas have per diems where they say, okay, if you go away to, let's just say, Narasa or SASA, you get $40 a day in meals, or you have to submit. But, you know, submitting for cups of coffee and things like that, your area should have a clear guideline about what's acceptable and what's not. Are just meals acceptable? Or do I get to go get my, like, you know, $11 smoothie because I need it today and, you know, I'm going to submit that expense. So I think we should be reasonable, but the budget is the worst possible place to hold people accountable. There has to be some other type of authority matrix that makes things clear. Do most areas reimburse their officers for mileage, and do they do this at a not-for-profit rate or the business rate? my experience is most areas reimburse their officers for mileage. My experience is that some choose the nonprofit rate and some choose the for-profit rate. I've also gotten the question about if the nonprofit rate doesn't cover your actual expenses, are you allowed to deduct that from your tax return, the money you're out of pocket? And the truth is, it's none of my business. Your tax return is your legal business, not mine. Whether you are working for the Red Cross or area number, whatever, if you're entitled per the US government or Canadian government to take a deduction because you provided that for a nonprofit organization, then that's your business. But we should be very careful with the nonprofit rate, because if you look at gas prices today, I don't want to make a sweeping judgment about all 50 states and all Canadian provinces, but someone sent me a picture the other day of somewhere in Arizona or the California border, like $5.50 a gallon. Well, I'm going to tell you, the nonprofit rate is not going to cover your out-of-pocket for gas. And so we should have these discussions. Is Robert Rules of Order required for a smooth meeting? Unfortunately, so few attendees in the assembly understand Robert's Rules of Order. Are there easier guidelines for a general meeting? Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Robert's Rules of Order is a guide for us. Here's the mistake I see at a lot of AA events. When you show up at the General Service Conference, there is a simple 8x11 piece of paper in your binder that you can rip out like I did every year and put in my pocket and unfold at my where I sat, that in one place tells me the general guidelines of the meeting. There are other areas that don't have this, and I think that's unfortunate for the GSRs. There are many areas that don't have it. And so how do we expect a new GSR to show up and feel welcome if they don't know how the business operates? Do we expect them to read a whole binder of information? I wish we were more like the General Service Conference in all areas, because I can tell you that the delegates would never put up with what the GSRs put up with, ever. They never would. The delegates show up, they get a binder, they get a simple form to read. The delegates show up, there's an agenda right in front of them listing everybody who's in the meeting, what's the agenda of this meeting, you know. There's, you know, anything we can do to make the experience of being a new GSR better and more welcoming, is always helpful. What does NERASA stand for? NERASA stands for the Northeast AA, Northeast Regional AA Service Assembly, NERASA. PRASA is the Pacific Regional AA Service Assembly. SARASA is the Southwest Regional AA Service Assembly. SASA is the Southern States AA Service Assembly. Let's see. Who has the responsibility for looking at district boundary zoning and ensuring equal allocation of number of groups per district? It's a great question. Most areas have a guideline with how to deal with this. If you want to add a new area, the General Service Conference has a guideline to deal with that. If you're thinking about redistricting or redrawing lines or adding a district or merging a district or anything like that, I would urge you to get in contact with your district chair, your DCM, or your delegate, your area chair, and find out where those guidelines are on redistricting. My experience is most areas have dealt with this before and do have it in writing somewhere. Can you give us an example of a minority report filed at conference, and how often does it occur? It doesn't occur that much. There's various debates about using the General Service Conference to file not a minority opinion, but a right of petition and a right of appeal. One was filed over the San Diego money. The conference never officially dealt with it, but the board heard the fellowship loud and clear and changed their policy on cash incentives. That was filed by a great, great woman named Gay G, a past regional trustee and delegate from Georgia, who, if you met her, you would know she was a force of nature in AA service. And she caught the board's attention with her letter, and it didn't need to come to a vote. Have any areas attempted to merge before? If so, what did the process look like? I am not aware of any areas merging. I'm aware of the following. I'm aware of new areas being created and therefore a current area becoming smaller geographically because there's a new area. I am aware of districts that have left one area and gone to another, because even though geographically they met the distinction, it was easier for them to participate. There is even an area in upstate New York. It's either the Canadian area or the New York area that has international in their name. And that is because there are groups on the Canadian and US side that go to each other's assemblies because it's easier for them and that's where they belong. So I've seen districts join other areas. I've seen groups participate in other districts, but I have never seen two areas merge. Should all area committee meetings and special activity meetings be open to AA members? You know, you would have to ask me, am I first king of the day, king for the day of AA? So I'm king and I'm going to answer that question. I'm not the king of AA. What I told you was what I know to be the truth today. Every area committee except for one in the United States and Canada is open to all AA members, but only area committee meeting members have a voice and a vote. There is one area where its area committee meeting is closed. I've been there as a visiting trustee and they had to make a motion for me to attend. So in general, most are open, but that doesn't mean you get to participate. It's kind of servants understand if they can't even board policy. If there is an area committee, but not all districts have that committee. If there is an area committee, but not all districts have that committee, how to best serve? Seems like getting those districts committees would be getting more service. Yeah, this is not about getting the districts to have committees. This is about the DCMs being a member of the area committee. Of all the service positions I've held, including area chair, I've always thought GSR was the hardest. Everyone is entitled to their own opinion. No doubt about it. What is your advice for best enlisting new GSRs? Well, if it was me today, I'd be talking about the plain language big book and the preamble and hybrid things and all kinds of Zoom things and should online groups get to participate. I would be using all of those as to get people to participate. Are the same questions and answers in CNE area given to all of the 92 areas? No, by CNE, just for everybody else, that person is referring to Southeast New York, Area 49, which I'm an alumni. their delegate chooses a couple of items and sends questions out and takes feedback in person, by email, whatever. Every area has a different way of doing this. I'm going to go over that next week.